This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. The number of people who've died in the Maui wildfires has increased to 67. Residents of Lahaina are being allowed to check on their homes. Tom Leonard's has been destroyed.
I lost my condo, my Jeep, my laptop, my cell phone, everything I ever owned for 40 years that I lived in Lahaina.
CBS's Jonathan Bigliotti is on Maui.
Evacuation orders were not issued. Text messages from those that we have spoken with, and we've spoken with countless, say they never arrived. And so people had to self-evacuate. And here's one more fact that also is haunting. Officials confirming that of all of the bodies they have recovered from the scene, all of them are of people who were trying to flee on foot.
U.S. Attorney David Weiss in Delaware has been investigating Hunter Biden's business and financial dealings and is named as special counsel for the investigation of President Biden's son. Attorney General Merrick Garland.
He will continue to have the authority and responsibility that he has previously exercised to oversee the investigation and decide where, when, and whether to file charges.
A three-year-old riding one of Texas migrant buses dies on the way to Chicago. Texas authorities did not say where the child was from or why they became ill. Republican Texas Governor Greg Abbott has bused thousands of migrants to Democratic-controlled cities in protest of the Biden administration's border policies. The U.S. and China agree to increase flights between the two countries.
The agreement between the world's two largest economies will increase the number of Chinese passenger flights into the U.S. to 18 weekly round trips on September 1st. And 24 per week on October 29th. The Chinese government will allow the same increase for American air carriers. The agreement between Beijing and Washington comes after China on Thursday lifted pandemic-era restrictions on group tours for more countries, including the U.S. Linda Kenyon, CBS News, Washington.
Ford is ready to ship an all-new Mustang to dealers next week, and it's not an EV. WWJ's Jeff Gilbert.
Two-thirds of the 13,000 orders are from Mustangs with a 5-liter V8. Mustang brand manager Jim Owen says they've added features for the track, but they've kept the look familiar.
It has to look unmistakably Mustang. It has to look fast, standing still.
Ford is not saying whether this seventh generation Mustang will be the last with a gasoline engine. Jeff Gilbert, CBS News, Detroit.
At the Hip Hop Museum in the Bronx, they're celebrating the 50th anniversary of hip hop. On Wall Street, stocks closed mixed. The Dow closed up 105 points, NASDAQ down 76. This is CBS News.
Hire with minimal effort and max speed with Indeed. Their hiring solution platform helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates efficiently. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. We are your hometown radio, refreshed.
Here's what you need to know in northwestern Wisconsin. Barron County officials said the Marathon County Bomb Squad was called in to get rid of dynamite found near Rice Lake on Wednesday. The Sheriff's Department said an outbuilding had to be destroyed as well due to it containing materials that could easily catch on fire or explode. According to a release, the property owners had no idea there was dynamite in the outbuilding. A Cumberland man was sentenced to 4 years of probation for stealing rebate checks while he worked as a mail carrier. Joshua Copas is accused of swiping 30 Menards rebate checks totaling $4,500 from people on his route. Copas pleaded guilty to mail theft by a postal employee and will have to pay all of the money back. A Neillsville man was sentenced to prison for killing a highway worker while he was driving drunk. Ray Neumuller will spend 10 years in prison for killing Russell Opelt and seriously injuring David Murphy while they were working to remove a tree in the road near Greenwood in 2021. Neumuller pleaded guilty to the charges of homicide and causing injury by intoxicated use of a vehicle back in April. For Civic Media News, I'm Jimmy Kuska.
Did you know the Wisconsin State Fair is 172 years old? It still celebrates the industries important to our state's history, like agriculture. But every year, new attractions and items are added. This year, there's more than 100 new foods to try. So what do you think topped the culinary list last year? Flamin' hot Cheetos chicken on a stick? Deep-fried old-fashioned? Or pino pretzel popper brat? The answer's coming up. The Wisconsin State Fair didn't start in its current home of West Allis. The first was in Janesville along the Rock River, then moved to different locations the next 40 years. The original cream puff has been around almost as long, close to 400,000 are gobbled up every year. So which food was number one last year?
It was the Pino Pretzel Popper brat. It came out on top. The State Fair is a true slice of Wisconsin, and it runs through August 13th. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to Hot Gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid. Dude, did you hear about Cassie and Jake? No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development? Nuh-uh. You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Thanks for listening to your local Civic Media radio station. Learn more on our website, civicmedia.us.
Yeah, but he hasn't gone down to the border like Tim Scott to stare at the water and pretend he gives a damn. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com.
Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So the Writers Guild, they've been on strike, I think, like, what, about 102 days now is the number that's being thrown out there. And the Screen Actors, it's coming up on a month that they've been on strike, been on the picket line. And reports are that there was some talk, I guess, with the Writers Guild. No movement from what I've been told. In fact, from what I hear, probably not going to be for a while. That's why I've asked Nikki Izanek to come talk with you. Nikki is the president of SAG-AFTRA in Philadelphia. Yes, yes, there is a SAG-AFTRA outside of Hollywood and all across the country. Important places for workers to be. Nikki, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me.
So am I getting this right? Are the numbers right? 102 days for the Writers Guild, coming up about a month for the Screen Actors. About right?
That's exactly right.
And why are we here? I want to get your thoughts on this. Why are you guys on the line?
So I see it as a multi-tiered issue. I think the first problem is that wages aren't keeping up with the basic cost of inflation. So the proposed raise that we were offered would have me making less money 3 years from now than I made 3 years ago. So that makes no sense. People can't afford to live. Most of us are working to be middle-class people. So that's the first issue. There's also, with the evolution of AI and technology, some of our actors were offered less than 1 day's pay to be scanned to use their image and likeness forever without their consent in perpetuity. And that's just a non-starter. Also, the streaming residual structure is broken. It doesn't represent a modern life. It just needs to be completely restructured and start over again. It's not the world that we live in. So it's an existential crisis, and it's also wages and working conditions. It's unsustainable.
Yeah, it always comes back down to wages, hours, conditions. And look, nobody ever wants to go on strike. But I see this as you don't have a choice. I mean, you were backed into, there was no choice in this. I always say strikes are the last arrow in the quiver. This was the only arrow in the quiver, as far as I'm concerned, because of the point that you made a second ago. This idea that they want to scan your likeness and then just use you whenever they feel, however they feel, forever. And you get one whopping day's pay for that.
Right. And it's like your grandkids, grandkids, grandkids could see your AI that you did 100 years ago that you made 1 day of money for in 2023. It's ridiculous.
So what I've been saying, and you can help me along if you think this is accurate, because a lot of this is going to be coming. This is the, you know, in my view, the first battle, the front lines of the AI class war. And the reason I think all of us should be paying attention is if you lose this, if you lose the right to to be yourself and to not have your image used by someone forever. If you lose the right to have writers write scripts and not have the kind of things that I've heard, it's going to be that much easier for them to do it to everybody else in every other industry. So I'm looking to your industry right now as, you know, that canary in the coal mine kind of thing, that first real battle that everyone should be concerned about.
It really is. Besides literally sucking the life out of what we do and replacing us with robots, it has the capacity to, if there are no parameters on this, and quick, that it could decimate many different industries and just remove people.
Because I look at this, and again, as someone who spent, you know, my lifetime in the trucking industry, automation is going to decimate that industry. AI is going to decimate, you know, you name it, coming forward. And if we don't push back, look, I'm not a Luddite, not yet, but there's got to be some rules. And as I've been telling people, this is the reason right now they should be joining and forming unions, if for no other reason than to push back on what is coming, a tsunami of job losses, I fear.
That's right. It's the OK Corral right now. And this is a labor issue. It's a labor issue for us. It's a labor issue for the country. And it's just amazing how quickly things are evolving. So there's a real need. It's not coming. It's here.
Yeah.
And there's a need to put real rules on that yesterday.
Now, you being the president of SAG-AFTRA in Philadelphia, a lot of people think, you know, when they think actors, they think Hollywood. There are SAG-AFTRA local unions all across this country who, you know, represent people, you know, who do lots of things. What do your members do in the Philadelphia area?
So I love Hollywood. I think it's wonderful. Our high profile actors that live in that region have been supportive. They've been donating to our emergency relief funds. I love New Yorkers. I work in the area also. But it comes as a surprise, and this is a real educational opportunity for the country, to some people, that there are 23 distinct regions outside of New York and LA that are mid and small size locals. And we do what everybody else does. It's sometimes a bit less high profile, but a lot of us are the journeyman actors. We are hardworking people who just want a fair day's wage for a hard day's work. We are the people that fill up this industry in other ways. So outside of Hollywood, we have the same jobs. We have less high profile stars. But in our region, we have just over 3,000 people that are SAG-AFTRA members, and we work the same jobs.
Yeah, and look, I had someone explain it to me. You do commercials, you do, you know, all kinds of, you know, all kind of voice work, all kinds of stuff that we don't really even think of. And one person explained to me that something that's already been lost, and maybe you can help me with this. You know, these training videos that, you know, especially the anti-union stuff that you see for Walmart or for Home Depot or any of these big multinational corporations who want to browbeat their employees about how bad unions are. They used to hire actors to do that. And what was interesting is they actually had, I think, as it was explained to me, I think it was Lowe's had actually union actors doing the anti-union video. Now all that's been evidently replaced by AI already, from what I've been told.
Yeah, I have seen many of the AI spots. I can still tell the difference, but they're getting good. It is starting to evolve. We really need a stop sign on that. One thing that we've been doing in this region is partnering with our AFL-CIO, and they have been fantastic about what videos and what opportunities and what joint creative efforts we can have to keep union jobs in-house, from political ads or just the idea that for every other union job in every other industry, there are many different performer union jobs that we can keep in-house. And that's just sort of one way that let's hold on to what we got. And make sure that we keep our union jobs around here. So they've been a great partner with us.
Yeah, I mean, we've got to be keeping jobs. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're with Nikki Izanik. She's president of SAG-AFTRA in Philadelphia. You can check out their website. That's out there now, SAG-AFTRA-strike.org. We'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at that. So, I mean, community-wise, you've got to be getting a lot of support. At least I hope you are, because, as I said, I see this as the front line of the class war in this moment. What kind of support you guys have been getting?
So it's been just a revolutionary experience. So Philly is a union town, but I had no idea. So on day one, I had already had a meeting planned with our local AFL-CIO. I showed up. We coincidentally ended up being on strike because I've been meeting with them. We said, let's plan a rally. We reached out. We borrowed everything from like their banner to their microphone. They sent us to the permitting person and we just started there. They said, like I said, this is my first rodeo, and they walked me through it. Ever since then, it's been anything we need. Our WGA people, we've been working in solidarity with them since the beginning of their strike. We helped shut down a Ridley Scott production in the region on day two. And that was just fantastic. It was just unprecedented solidarity with our brother and sister unions. The Musicians Union has come out, IATSE. Anybody we've ever asked anything of, they've over-delivered. It's been just really inspiring.
No, because I think everyone understands just how important this fight is. So how can I help? How can others help in this? Because, you know, as I've laid this out, I think everyone should be concerned about this. I think everyone should be on board with this, because this is, I believe, that first battle. And if we can maybe push back hard enough here, maybe it'll be easier down the road for everyone else. So how can folks help?
Well, from region to region, we've been taking solidarity photos and having rallies. We just had one in Atlantic City the other day, which is also part of the local. Part of it is, if you can give, please give. The SAG-AFTRA Emergency Relief Fund is collecting money. If you can't, anybody can educate, right? So if you're aware of our issues, you understand that it's a labor issue. And in this narrative, to be able to educate others that, you know, maybe if the stereotype is that this is represented one sort of way, you can say, well, maybe not really. Let me explain to you what's going on. This is a labor issue. And I think educating each other is the best line of defense here, because it's really being misrepresented by people that are in a multi-trillion dollar industry. And it's important from person to person to really stand strong together.
What's the biggest misconception? What's that myth that's been thrown out at you that isn't accurate?
I would say, so I'm from Philly, and it's being portrayed as a fancy pants people problem. And it's not. This isn't just a Hollywood thing. This isn't about all of the people complaining because they don't make enough money and they're making this highfalutin lifestyle with their yachts. We're not those people. Most of us are struggling just to get to the middle class. We're not higher than middle class struggling to be rich. We're struggling to get middle class. And $26,000 a year is not made by 87% of our members. And that's just under what it takes to qualify for healthcare. So for a lot of people, that would be considered part-time income, but people, this is their full-time life. So it's just a real basic struggle.
No, I'm glad you brought that up, because a lot of people that I've talked to, well, you know, why does Tom Cruise need this or that? He's got agents to do all this stuff. And you go, no. It's not the Tom Cruises or the big name actors. It's everyone else that you don't know their names in, you know, film after film. Those are the folks who are struggling to make ends meet. That their images are the ones that are important. And that's why we need to be fighting this. At least that's my thought.
That's exactly right. And a lot of those higher profile people have people negotiating on their behalf. This is about the journeyman actors for many of us, because we're not negotiating above scale. A lot of us are just, whatever the scale is, that's what we're going to work for. So it's wonderful that they're also fighting for us and that they're willing to stand in solidarity when really their contracts are negotiated typically at a much higher rate.
Yeah, I mean, I wish you the best. I hope this is short, but I fear this is going to be a long one. At least that's what I'm the sense I'm getting, especially since right at the beginning on the Writers Guild side, there was a report that one of the executives said, we're going to make them lose their homes and go bankrupt and all kinds of other horrible things. I got to think the studios are thinking the same way.
Yeah, I think that they are. And, you know, maybe if you're used to a comfortable life and have a certain income, you think that that'll be an easy thing. But we're performers. Many of us, if not most of us, are used to the struggle, right? You can't starve us out. Yeah. We've been resilient and figuring out other things and ways to survive for a very long time. The idea that that's where their mind is representative of how far apart we are.
No, that's an incredible answer. One day stronger, one day longer. Nikki, I appreciate you taking some time for us. Hope folks will take a look at the website, sagafterastrike.org. We'll get links out on social media. Nikki Isaac, I appreciate you taking time for us.
Thank you so much.
Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break, right back with your thoughts. 1-866-416-RICK, 1-866-416-7425.
are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, you know, I came across this video today that just blew my mind. And it's one of those things that makes me go, I've taken a lot of hits from people about talking about religion and how crazy some of it has gotten. And, you know, it's one of those things where I look at some of this stuff and wonder, how is it that people are willing and sit through some of this? So I got to play this video that I came across on TikTok. It's kind of crazy that this is the world where some religion has gone.
What are you coming up here to do? You want to come take over the service? Huh? What do you want? What?
I just want a prayer.
Get out of here.
Can I get a little grace?
No, you can't. You get out of here. Get him out of here. Drag this bozo out.
That's the pastor.
Pull him out. Hey, help him out. Get him out.
That's the man of God.
And you know what? Anybody wants to come up here and take over the service? We'll throw you out of here, buddy. This church is not a free-for-all. This isn't an open mic. This isn't a karaoke bar. Okay? I'm the man of God here. I meet the qualifications. I run this church. And if you don't like it, then get out. This is not some church where every first-time visitor and brand-new believer and people who've never even read the Bible are going to come up and take over the service. Not happening. Okay? If you want that kind of watered-down leadership, go to some house church with your Amish buddies and sit around the coffee table with your coffee clatch. This is a New Testament church. We have a bishop here. We have an overseer here. Like it or lump it. And if you don't like it, feel free to get up and leave the service at any time. If 50% of people walk out, I don't care. Because you know what? I'm not going to pastor a oneness cult. Amen. I'm not going to pastor a Pentecostal church. I'm the pastor of a Baptist church. Amen. And if you're not a Baptist, then get out. Amen.
I gotta tell you, I saw this. I had to play this. This is one of those things where you go, who in their right mind is going to sit through that? Who in their right mind is going to go to the convenience store front church, you know, in the mall to listen to that guy? I'm the man. I'm the man. It's my church. I'm me. Wow. And all the guy wanted to do was someone to pray for him, to pray with him. You know, and this is supposed to be what they're about. No, no, no. It's about the ego. It's about the warrior. I saw a thing. I got a thing online today of Christian wear, so that you could show your faith at the gym. This is how far religion has gone. And Jesus is buff. I mean, Jesus is rocking some guns, man. And I'm sitting here and I'm going, what is wrong with people? This is a guy Jesus would have thrown out of the church. This is a guy that Jesus probably would have flipped over a table to go after. And for me, this is the weird world that we're in. And this is why, you know, I keep coming back to this place of community, and churches used to be that that place. Now, what was frightening to me in that video, and I don't know if you heard it, because I watched it like six times, is the people who were sitting in that congregation listening to this guy throw a temper tantrum about how it's all about him. He's the pastor. He's in charge. Yeah, I'm me, I. And they're sitting there going, amen. I'm the man of God, he says. I got to tell you. Any sane, rational person should have been heading for the door. Any sane, rational person would have been going, get me. We're gathering the sheep and we're getting the flock out of here. That's a biblical reference because, you know, Jesus was with the sheep and all that. I'm sure you got that. No, I'm concerned about where we are. I grew up in the Catholic Church at a time when it was about peace and social justice. Priests walked picket lines. You would have seen the priest in our parish out there with the SAG-AFTRA workers. You would have seen them out there with the steel workers. You would have seen them out there blessing the workers and on the side of righteousness and good. Now it's all about the greed. It's all about the prosperity gospel and the warrior Jesus. I mean, I actually tweeted it out. You know, buff Jesus, you know. And it's, I mean, of course, buff Jesus is very white. And the liberties that are taken in rewriting the book is quite remarkable. That guy who lost his mind should never be in front of the congregation. In fact, he should be confessing his sins, vanity, and all of that. But I know, no, he's a man of God. He took the online course. Back in the old days, it had been correspondence. You'd get those on the back of the matchbook. Now it's these online universities that, well, you know, you take a couple of classes, you're now you're a minister. In fact, I don't even think you need to take classes to be a minister, to be honest. And this is the frightening part of this, because these folks gain followers. And those followers then go out into social media and spew nonsense. This is what's concerning to me, because what the right has done masterfully is they've taken over the churches. The left ceded religion to the right. You know, I remember when Sam Alito was being confirmed for the Supreme Court, and they were having Justice Sunday, where with the technology of the day, which is really impressive, they linked up 1,000 churches. They heavily went after the churches so that they could promote we're going to save the babies. And what's interesting to me, really, honestly and truthfully interesting to me, is all of those churches who are like, we're going to save the babies. We're going to go out and march in front of abortion clinics. We're going to go out and do all this work to make sure that the babies are born. I haven't seen one of them pushing any politicians to say, hey, you know what? Healthcare. Those babies are going to need healthcare. Those babies are going to need to be fed. Those babies are going to need childcare so mom or dad or mom can go off to work. We're going to need housing and you name it. We're going to force these kids to be born. We got to take care of them. I haven't seen any of that. What I have seen out of religion is that kind of craziness. And I sat there and I just watched it and I'm going, is this where we are? And sadly, the answer is, yeah, it's where we are. So the question, because there are good, decent people of faith, and I've talked about this. I've known them. How do you bring it back from the brink? How do we bring this back? And look, you folks on the left, you've got to speak up. And not by just words, but by actions. See, I'm an action guy. I don't profess my faith. I don't come out and wear religiosity on my sleeve. Talk about how we can make lives better, because it was that upbringing. It was all those years in church of, hey, you know what? We do need to take care of the least of us. We are our brother's keeper. It is about the Sermon on the Mount, which evidently today, I don't know if you've heard, There are these kind of crazy, religious groups who think, Jesus was too weak. We need tough Jesus, tough love Jesus. If you're hungry, you pull yourself up by your bootstraps. See, the new Jesus would have said, "Hey, you deadbeats, no loaves and fishes. Get a job." That's what new Jesus would say. Or at least that's what they would have us believe. And again, my fear is crazy is getting so much attention. In fact, there's part of me that actually regrets playing that because I've given that guy some notoriety. But I hope for all the wrong reasons. I hope people look at that with disgust. And I hope all those people never come back. I hope there's some sanity there. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1894. That was the day that federal troops pushed Kelly's Industrial Army out of Washington, D.C. and across the Potomac River. The army was a group of unemployed men who had come to the nation's capital to protest government inaction. The country was in the grip of an economic depression. The nation's agricultural regions in the South and Great Plains were also hit by a drought. Times were hard for American workers and families. The call had gone out across the nation for the unemployed to make their way to the doorstep of Congress. The goal was to petition for public infrastructure projects to put people back to work. Businessman Jacob Coxey had organized a march of the unemployed from Ohio. Charles T. Kelly and his group came from California. They rode the rails and made it to Des Moines, Iowa, where they encamped. After a while, the local residents decided the unemployed group had outstayed their welcome. The Iowans provided lumber so the Industrial Army could build flatboats and be on their way. By the time Charles Kelly and his men made it to D.C., Coxey had already been sentenced to 20 days in jail for trespassing on the Capitol lawn. Yet, unemployed men from across the country kept coming into the nation's capital. 1,200 men arrived from different points across the country. One of those in Kelly's group was a young author by the name of Jack London. London wrote of his experience, quote, "Across the wild and woolly west, clear from California, General Kelly and his heroes captured trains. But they fell down when they crossed the Missouri and went up against the effete East. The marchers' protests earned no help from Congress." Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
How about a little bit of good news for a change? Specifically, good news about news. The demise of local newspapers has been a very depressing story in the last few years, with several thousand of them gobbled up by Wall Street profiteers. Those money powers loot the publication's assets, then callously shut down each community's paper or reduces them to empty news shells. So, that's that. Local print journalism is passé, right? Wrong. High-spirited, community-minded subscribers in places like Glen Rose, Texas, Hamburg, Iowa, Portland, Maine, and International Falls, Minnesota, are humming an upbeat tune of regeneration that could be titled, "Not Dead Yet." In Maine, for example, 5 of the state's 6 daily papers and 17 weeklies were sinking under the ownership of an investment group. But all were recently bought by the National Trust for Local News, a nonprofit started 2 years ago. The trust is turning each publication over to local nonprofit owners and helping them find ways to become sustainable. Another new effort called Cherry Road Media has bought 77 rural papers in 17 states, most from the predatory Gannett conglomerate that wanted to dump them. Cherry Road's business plan is simple, old-time genius. Return editorial decision-making to local people and journalists who know the town. Be an active presence and participant in community affairs. Make the locals responsible for sustaining their town's paper and, most important, reinvest profits in real local journalism that advances democracy. This is Jim Hightower saying, in both of these new initiatives, the foremost mission is to serve the common good of the communities, not to pad the wealth of a few distant financiers. To learn more about these models and how you might implement something similar in your town, contact Institute for Rural Journalism, ruraljournalism.org.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So Politico reported that Ron DeSantis was in Iowa and taking a verbal tongue lashing. In fact, they were chanting Ron DeFascist and putting fingers. Evidently, they had somebody with a megaphone calling him Ron DeFascist and putting fingers. Yeah. Also, Ron DeSantis' campaign made news as they blocked a local journalist from coming into an event. The good folks over at Starting Line in Iowa, they're one of the career news groups. Guy signed up. Guy had his press pass, had all the information. He was told, nope, you can't come in. It was a private event because you're going to cover our words accurately. And, well, we can't have that. Can't have that. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the top stories of the day, I've asked our good friend, former Ohio congressman and political analyst Bob Ney to come share some thoughts. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick.
So what do you make of this? Do you think this is going to be what we see all campaign season? No, you don't. You don't believe what we believe. No journalists allowed.
Well, I think there's several things. You know, they chanted Ron DeFascist and then putting fingers. I don't. What does that mean?
I don't actually know. I thought it was.
I don't know. But it was a disruption this time. So far as it's reported, it's a disruption by the left, is what they're reporting, you know, meaning Democrats, or it could be a to the left group, you know, who knows. And then the reporter thing, I mean, this happens in campaigns where, you know, all of a sudden a reporter's not allowed in. It makes a bigger news story than if you just, you know, allowed them to be there. So I think we're going to see disruption. I think you're going to see it, you know, with the candidates' events, you know, with Biden. I think you're going to see it with Republicans. It's going to heat up, and it's going to be out there. There are going to be hecklers.
Yeah. The putting fingers thing I just looked up was a Trump ad. I forgot all about this.
I didn't remember that.
It was a Trump ad showed a guy sticking three fingers in his mouth. It wasn't DeSantis. Right. And the words were, DeSantis loves sticking his fingers where they don't belong.
Mm-hmm.
DeSantis has his dirty fingers all over senior entitlements. Mm-hmm. And it's Trump attacking DeSantis for going after Social Security.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's where putting fingers comes from. Now that makes a little bit more sense.
Something
that Trump did. And this is going to be an interesting thing because the Trump supporters are destroyers, man. There isn't going to be a candidate who isn't going to be heckled or anything.
Oh, sure.
You're going forward.
Well, the whole campaign is going to be, I mean, just, we were talking about this tonight. I was at a class reunion, you know, for our high school. And of course, you know, people came up to me and tell me, what do you think? I'm like, what do you think? That's what I told them. I want to hear what you think. I don't care what I think. And I think everybody tonight, just one way or the other, no matter who they liked or didn't like, just they have fatigue already. There's fatigue.
No, and this is, you know, this is what I had said back in 2011. If you remember the Scott Walker recall.
Right, right.
What happened there is Republicans learned a lesson. They can fatigue voters. They can throw all kinds of stuff at them, you know, robocalls and all kinds of stuff. And you can get people to want to tune out. And I think that's a huge part of what we're seeing.
Well, fatigued voter, and I learned this in my campaigns. As you know, I ran for 24 years. And I had one or two opponents who got pretty smart about this. And they did everything under the sun. It just became such a negative barrage. And the whole purpose was to turn off the independent voters because my district that I represented was majority Democrat. Now, that didn't hurt me because we had a nice union vote and we had a nice Democrat vote. But technically, in a district like I represented, if you could turn off the independents, get them disgusted, they don't like either side, they stay away, then your base is there. It just so happened I split enough of his Democrat base to win. But in this campaign, tell me if I'm wrong, Rick, in this campaign, if Donald Trump is toxic with the independents anyway, So if independents get just so frustrated, it's like, oh, you know, this one, and they stay away from the polls, enough of them, you're still got a pretty tight split between Biden and Trump, you know, the Biden loyalists and the Trump loyalists, I think.
No, this is what I've said from the beginning. I think if it does come down, and I think it's going to be Trump and Biden. I know you don't think Trump's going to be there, but I think it's going to be Trump and Biden. If I had to put money on it, I'm going to go with Biden because I don't see Trump getting new voters. I think he is. I don't think there's a new way for him to spin any policy, to spin any statement. I think people are either love him or hate him. I don't see any middle ground there. Whereas with Biden, I still see a little bit of middle ground where he's doing some good work that, you know, moderate, you know, independents, moderate Republicans are going to go, hey, this is good for the economy. I can see myself going there. For instance, you know, the prevailing wage thing that they did on Tuesday. I think that's huge for the building trades. A lot of their members are Republican voters. That is a huge thing to get them to go, hey, this guy's going to help me.
What about Manchin? If he became third party, would that cut? Who would that cut into, I wonder?
That's a good question. I mean, you know, for the presidential election, nobody, because Biden's not going to win West Virginia. Do you see any scenario where Biden wins West Virginia?
No, none.
Yeah, so I see him as irrelevant unless it comes down to, you know, a 50-49 they're three independents, two independents now. So what, a 49-48, you know, three. No, that's a whatever. It comes down to where his vote is the tiebreaker.
That would make the Electoral College interesting.
Yeah, no, that. I got to work on my math. No, but what I see that as is the only way I see him helping or hurting is if the Senate's up for grabs, because I don't see him running for president. I know he's been toying with it. I just don't see it. I don't. What do you think? I don't think
Manchin will, but if he did and he was a third party guy, that would make it pretty fascinating.
We'll see. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show with Bob Ney, former Ohio congressman and political analyst. I got to get your thoughts on this this statement that the president made on China. He said that, you know, China's in trouble. They're a ticking bomb, were his words. He said they've got some problems, and that's not good, because when bad folks have problems, they do bad things. Now, this is, you know, after, you know, in June, he called Xi Jinping a dictator, which that didn't go well. Thoughts on that kind of rhetoric?
Well, he's saying because of, you know, of the economic woes, and he did say, you know, it is a ticking bomb in many cases, and it's the economic challenges because of weak growth. So, when I look at it, and he says China's in trouble and they've got problems, and he did. He said when bad folks have problems, they do bad things. And, of course, I think they are bad folks, not the people, but the, you know, government. And he said that. Now, he did say he didn't want to hurt China, and he wanted a rational relationship with the, you know, with the country itself. But yes, he did. You know, he did call them a dictator. Now, I'm probably a really bad person to ask the question you asked, because I just can't stand the Chinese government. And I think that no matter what we've done to appease them, they then say, oh, that's good, and we're going to step on you.
Yeah.
So I don't see, you know, Biden not cozying up to them as a negative at this point in time, you know, whatsoever. In fact, maybe China will eventually respond to want to make some type of potential deals with us because we're not, you know, yielding to them. Joe Biden kept Trump's tariffs, which what did we hear when Trump did the tariffs? Oh, this is the end of this and that. Oh, we can't survive with Trump doing this. And he kept them, and Joe Biden kept them. And I think that was a smart move, you know, for it. Now, also this week, President Biden signed an executive order that prohibits some new investment in China. And that's in the sense of technologies, computer chips, you know, AI, et cetera. So I don't know. I don't view it as a wrong statement. I don't view it as too combative.
I think it's freaking awesome.
Strategy for do it. So, I mean, I'm personally happy with it. Like I said, I'm probably the wrong person for people to ask because I'm a hawk on it. I think the only thing they understand is what he did today.
No, absolutely, 100%. I'm all in favor of this. And this is why, the reason I bring this up is you brought up Trump and the tariffs, you brought up Trump and a lot of the tough talk. This is, this isn't, the kind of, outrageous tough talk, but this is hardline talk with a policy agenda, with a direction, with some planning in this, saying, look, we're gonna bring sensitive technologies back. We're gonna ensure that chips and cyber stuff, all that stuff's gonna be done here. We're gonna start protecting U.S. interests in these places. And oh, by the way, we're gonna reshore manufacturing. And the reason I bring this up is I don't know if you saw the statement by the BYD, Build Your Dreams, the largest car dealer in China, saying, it's now time for the Chinese brands. We're going to go after those old legends. And that what they mean is us. So this idea that we're starting a trade war, you go, no, we've been in a trade war for decades, and we've been losing, and finally someone has stepped up and said, we're going to fight back.
Right. We gave permanent trade status. Every modern-day president, every one of them, and I remember Obama and Romney. During the campaign, Obama and Romney out-China'd each other.
Yep.
No, I'm going to do this to China. No, you're going to do that? I'm going to do more. They out-China'd each other. George Bush, you go back to Bill Clinton, the permanent trade status. The presidents said one thing and then just felt they were the world president. That's what I seriously believe that. Plus all the mega international companies breathing down everybody's throats. They were in and out of our office like a revolving door. And then along came Trump. Now, other things Trump messed up, NATO, the Iran nuke deal. But when it came to China, he started a path. Now, I think Biden is following through better because Biden does hold tough, strong talk. It's okay to say what he's saying. But then, we still send, for what it's worth, we send, Blinken makes an outreach to China to continue to, quote, talk. And that's okay.
No, you got to talk to them. I don't want to see them collapse because, the stories I'm hearing coming out of there, that they're in a deflationary period, which is dangerous for the world. And, I've got friends going, how can they sell, a tool set for $3 and free shipping? Because they're in a deflationary period.
Right.
They're just trying to sell off whatever they can get to keep people working because they don't want to end up in a depression.
Also in a country with over 1.2 and some billion people, you sure don't want people sitting around.
No, I mean, that's the thing. Now, I got to get to the big topic of the day. The judge, the U.S. District Judge Tanya Chutkan, the protective order, good, bad, thoughts, anything?
Well, this one's going to be tough because, it's going to go on and on. Trump's going to say, certain things. Of course, the judge has issued a protective order, in when it applies to, what we're going to call, interference. And it will, limit the use of sensitive material. Now, anything said here and there, because the special prosecutor came and said, Trump was basically throwing out these threats, which then would go against, witnesses. But what the judge is saying today is that to limit the use and the disclosure of sensitive material as they go forward. And so they've imposed a kind of restrictive set of restrictions and probably more narrow than the prosecutors had sought originally, probably more narrow than what they want. Now, Trump's legal team argued only sensitive information should be kept under wraps. But the judge sided with the Smith on the details, the devil's in the details, including the request that all the recordings and, the reports they have of witness testimony should be considered sensitive information. So the judge went with that. I think that's a big, big deal. She also gave the government a lot of discretion to decide. This is important, too. She gave the government discretion to decide which records should be considered sensitive and restricted. So guess what? If I was Smith, they're all going to be.
Yeah, No, because you know, I think she's right. You don't want this tried in the court of public opinion. You want it tried in the courtroom.
Now, there are surrogates out there, too. Now, Trump cannot transmit or through the lawyer's sensitive information, but, you know, they guess. They'll guess certain things. And so surrogates are going to go out there, and then, you know, you really can't track down the surrogates or what's said on TikTok or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, but it's still not the campaign. It's still not Trump. So I guess the question then becomes, do you see a point at which Trump does what Trump does and push the envelope? Do you see a point where, you know, where they lock him up?
Well, no, they won't lock him up, but he'll push the envelope. He's going to do it. He doesn't listen to his lawyers. He's going to push the envelope. And then I think they'll haul him in again, you know, or his lawyers in, and then say, you know, we're going to have to do something eventually with it. It's hard to lock up a president.
Yeah, you know? I keep saying, I think he's going to be found guilty of something, but I don't think he's ever going to jail.
No, because here's the thing. If you want to protect him, you have to put him in solitary confinement. And this country would never, ever, ever stand for, you know, solitary confinement.
This is where I'm going to get into trouble with the left. I don't believe anyone should be in solitary confinement, not even Trump.
Yeah. Well, I was in federal corrections, and let me tell you, solitary is when I say mind-boggling, it's mind-blowing. Yeah. It can literally, mentally make you have a problem immediately.
No, it's not right. And there's so much information out there. It's not right. It's just not at all. So last line I've got for you, because all I heard today from the right wing spin machine is that this is a free speech issue. You know, Donald Trump should be able to speak freely. It's free speech. I must have heard that 100 times today. Mm-hmm. Do you see this as a free speech issue?
Well, no. Donald Trump can say all he wants. He can say that Smith is corrupt. He can say that Smith is incompetent. He can say things about the judge if he wants to. I highly advise him not to. You know, I really do. But he can still say all kinds of things. It's a witch hunt. Hunter Biden should be on trial, not me. Whatever he wants to say. Here's what can't happen now, though. If, in fact, any type of witness information that his lawyers become privy to, you know, here's what witness A says, here's what witness B says, and then Trump tries to throw that out there, now you've got tampering with evidence. Now you've got obstruction of justice. He could end up with more charges. So that's not free speech. He's free. He's still free to harp about anything he wants.
Yeah.
He can call Smith names if he wants to. He can do that. But what he can't do is to take sensitive information and then talk about it. And so that doesn't, you know, there's no trial where you can take sensitive information given to either side, because they have to, in discovery, give the information. You can't take that and take it out to the streets. There's no trial on earth that you can do that.
Yeah, one of the things that I thought was interesting is that the judge said he's a defendant. He's a criminal defendant. He's going to have restrictions like every other defendant.
Every other one.
Thought that was kind of a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, look, the lawyers are going to be privy to this sensitive information for a reason. What will happen is they see that witness A is against Trump. They're going to call everybody they know in the world and ask every dirty thing they can find about that witness. That's how this works.
Yeah.
You know, been there, saw it, we've done it. That's how it works. Now, that's one thing. That's the fair game or unfair justice, whatever you want to call it. But to release, you know, names, hey, here's the person that said this. Why don't you all go after them? Why don't we intimidate them? Why don't we surround their house? That you can't do. It's not ever done in a trial.
Well, so, we may actually see it this time around.
He might not be in what they call the shoe solitary confinement, but he may have a problem and he might have additional charges.
Well, we will see how this plays out. Let the fun and the entertainment begin. But Bob, as always, I appreciate the time.
Thank you, Rick.
Good stuff. Our good friend Bob Ney. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 2013. That was the day a somewhat unexpected new union formed in Bangor, Maine.
Local 207 of the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers represents lobster fishermen. Lobster fishermen are known for being fiercely independent, so it surprised many when some started talking union. One of those to bring up the early idea of forming a union was Magnus Lane, a fisherman originally from Iceland. There was cause for concern in the Maine lobster industry that year. A glut of lobsters had driven prices down to a 40-year low. At the same time, fuel and bait prices continued to rise. More than 100 lobstermen and women attended that first meeting. They elected officers and settled on bylaws. In a television interview, newly elected local president Rocky Ally explained, "We're the ones who catch the lobster. We should be able to control the price." Over the next year, membership grew to 600 members from up and down the Maine coast. A year after the union was founded, boat captain Julie Eaton explained the importance of the new union in a newspaper interview. She said, "For the first time, we feel like we have a voice. For the first time, we feel hope that we can protect our way of life." While some lobster fishermen support the union, others have organized against unionization. But the union has been able to win some legislative protections. For example, they were able to ensure that lobster fishermen can keep their fishing license while on active military duty. This union continues to chart new waters in the fight for working people in Maine. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com. Like us on Facebook and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. John sent me an email asking why I didn't talk about Hunter Biden. Because I've already said everything I've got to say about Hunter Biden. I said from you, I think you heard it. I hope you heard it, John. They appointed a special prosecutor. And okay, good. Well, we're going to find out what he did. If he broke the law, he's going to be held accountable. Like anybody else, he should not be held higher or lower than anyone else. I would argue, though, because his name's Biden, he is being treated much worse than anybody else would be. And that's because Republicans are using this as an opportunity to hurt Joe Biden. That's all this is about. There's no smoking gun. Every time they say, we've got it. We're going to have a hearing on it. And we're going to whistleblower. And then we find out the whistleblower gone. Arrested somewhere for some kind of crime that they've gotten into. Look, even the guy that was appointed as the special prosecutor, I look at Ron Johnson, the attorney, the senator from Wisconsin, in a 2022 letter to Attorney General Merrick Garland. He writes, the undersigned requests that you provide U.S. Attorney Weiss the full protection and authority of a special counsel. Now he says. There may be others who would be a worse pick than U.S. Attorney Weiss to be special counsel, but based on the prosecution of Hunter Biden to date, he has to be close to the worst pick. This is unbelievable. What a difference less than a couple of months makes. He's great. Full protection. He's the guy. He's special. Yes. Yeah. And now because he didn't do the kind of witch honey stuff that Trump accuses everybody else of doing. Now he's the worst possible pick. Unbelievable. And me, I just want people to be held to the same standard. So now that you've got a special counsel looking into Hunter Biden's dealings with Burisma and Ukraine and all of this, how about we go after Jared Kushner? I mean, turnabout is fair play. And I got to tell you, I think the numbers are much bigger on the Kushner side. I think the $2 billion that Kush got from the Saudis, I don't know, that's a lot. Now, the narrative that I've heard spun, and again, what the right does masterfully is they can spin a tight narrative. This is all because evidently Joe Biden got him the job. Because Biden needed the money. And then they got Joe Biden to get the prosecutor fired because, who knows why.
And there was a, multi-millions of dollars of money funneled through. And now the war in Ukraine. And they tie everything together. And